One of the oldest, most adaptable, and most prolific creatures in the world is also one of the most universally reviled. The cockroach lived over 40 million years ago, and they will almost certainly remain on this planet long after humans leave. But for now, we're stuck with them. Joining us on today's Please Explain is Richard Schwide, whose book, The Cockroach Papers, A Compendium of History and Lore, has just been reissued in paperback by the University of Chicago Press. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show. Hello.
Hi, thank you, Leonard. I'm pleased to be here.
And we're talking to you in Barcelona, where I assume there are no cockroaches. We also invite our listeners to join in the conversation during these Please Explain segments. You can call us at 212-433-9692, write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So do we have an approximate date of when cockroaches first appeared on Earth?
They think it's about 3.5 million years ago, but I want to I have to make a correction, unfortunately. We do have cockroaches here in Barcelona. We don't have the small brown cockroach that's so ubiquitous in New York City, but we do have the Periplaneta americana, which is often called a water bug by people that don't want to mention cockroach. Mm-hmm. And it's quite a large cockroach, and it's quite unpleasant. It lives in the tubes of the old buildings, the pipes of the old buildings. And we occasionally will find one, not very often, because we work hard to keep the place clean so that we don't have to come on them in the middle of the night, which is not very pleasant.
Does the fossil record indicate that roaches have gone through many mutations over the millions of years they've been on Earth?
Not very many mutations. They go through, everything mutates, and the cockroach has a remarkable capability to mutate a gene here and a gene there in order to develop resistance to insecticides, for instance. But over the long run and by and large, the cockroach design is so effective and so evolutionarily successful that they haven't had to mutate much. You know, they can pretty well adapt to in many circumstances.
And you're right that the cockroach is built for survival. It's often said that they would probably survive a nuclear war. Is that likely?
Well, they would. It depends. They can survive higher doses of radiation, substantially higher doses of radiation than we can. But I suppose in an all-out nuclear war, the radiation might reach a level at which even cockroaches couldn't withstand it. But they would certainly be around far longer than we would be.
How long can they survive without food and water? Don't they have special mechanisms in their bodies that allow them to store food and water longer than most other insects?
They do. They can. I tell you the truth, I'm not sure how long they can survive without food. They can survive without water for a very long time because they have various physical mechanisms, some of which are too gross to describe on a family radio program, but by which they retain water in their bodies. They don't excrete much water at all, and they keep it to themselves so that they can use it should water become in scarce supply.
Do male or female roaches live longer?
I think the female roaches live longer, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, you know, a roach goes through six distinctive molds and bodies, actually. And they don't live terribly long, other species, but they can live a while.
Well, how long do they tend to live going through all those different molts?
I'd have to look it up in the book. I think that it's about a year and a half, but I could really be wrong.
Are there albino cockroaches, or are we just seeing them when they're no longer in their shell?
That's exactly what's happening, is that you're seeing a cockroach that has just molted, for instance, and what you're seeing is what's beneath the shell, beneath the exoskeleton of the cockroach. That's what scientists believe. I don't think that they believe that—well, there are albino roaches, but they're not any more frequent in the general roach population than they say albino Homo sapiens are in the human population. You might see one, but it's more likely that you're seeing catching one in between moles.
I'm speaking with Richard Schwide, who has written many books, including Hereafter, Search for Immortality, Eel, most recently Octopus. We're talking about the cockroach, the subject of another one of his books, The Cockroach Papers, A Compendium of History and Lore, now available in paperback from the University of Chicago Press. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where handle is at Leonard Lopate. Is revulsion to cockroaches nearly universal in humans?
Well, to live cockroaches, I think it pretty much is. However, there has to be said that there are two or three places in the world where people eat cockroaches, always frying them deep oil. So they're probably welcome there if you happen to be a person who does like the taste of the cockroaches lives where you live.
Well, I ate one in Mexico. Because I was challenged to eat it, and it had the taste of the thing that had been cooked in. It really didn't have much taste otherwise. It was perfectly fine. A couple of crunches, and it was gone.
Well, there you go. But I think, in general, the problem for a lot of people is that they can't afford, if you're living somewhere where you don't have a lot of food and you have even less sanitation, it's difficult to wage war against cockroaches, whereas in the first world, we can afford to take steps to try and hold down the cockroach population in our living space. So it's kind of a difference, but I think people all over the world would like to live cockroach-free, although I think they will never achieve that.
They're often associated with unclean spaces, but you write that cockroaches are obsessed with cleanliness.
That's right. It's a very curious sort of a paradox. And not only that, the cockroaches will eat some really disgusting things. They'll eat just about anything. They do thrive in dirty places. And they are obsessed with cleanliness because their entire sensory input, pretty much, comes in through their antenna. And they have two of them. It comes in through their antenna. And the antenna is divided into 136 segments, which have different sensory and neural functions. So they keep their antenna clean, sort of like a cat will keep its whiskers clean. A cockroach does the same kind of thing. The great novel by a great Arkansas writer named Donald Harrington, who's no longer alive, about cockroaches, in which the cockroaches are all obsessed with keeping their antenna clean.
Does a cockroach get most of its information from its antenna?
It does get its information from its antenna, most of its information. That said, it has two sort of small sensory receptors at the back. And when you, for instance, many people are always surprised, you open a door and turn on a light, and the cockroach is already running for cover. And you think, wow, that's incredibly fast. I just turned on the light. But in fact, they have sensed the slight disturbance in the air that happens when you open the door before it turned on the light. And just with that, they're already headed for hiding.
Do they have eyes, or do they use their antenna?
Cockroach has an eye. Yeah, they have eyes. But they're much more dependent upon their antenna and their rear antenna, if you would, to understand the world around them. They also smell by way of their antenna. If you could say that a cockroach smells, it receives some sort of olfactory signal through specific segments of the antenna.
They don't have lungs, so what's the breathing process?
The breathing process is they don't have lungs, but they do have a heart, and they have blood. Although you rarely will see the blood of a cockroach because what they have surrounding their innermost parts is a fat body, so that when you step on a cockroach, for instance, you don't see the blood. You see sort of a whitish liquid, and that's the fat body. But they do have blood, and it's while they don't have lungs, do any insects have lungs?
I don't know, but does that mean that cockroaches can live without oxygen for a long time?
It breathes, yeah, and it breathes through its body. It has 10 pair of openings called lateral spiracles along the edge of its abdomen. And they breathe through that. Air comes in through those. They have a low oxygen requirement, and the blood doesn't carry oxygen, but it does have some sanguinary care. It carries nutrients and waste products, seals wounds, and it's a remarkable animal. One thing you can be sure of is if you see one somewhere, there's a lot of them, because usually they only come out in the open when forced to do so. When somebody could see them, they'll come out in the dark. But when you see them, it's because they're so crowded where they live. They like to live in big crowds, cockroaches. They're not solitary animals like, say, the octopus. They like to live together, and they like to sleep together, huddled up, touching one another when they sleep. They like a tactile sensation of being in a crowd. So when you see one out in the open sight, as it were, it's generally because it's real crowded back there where it would rather be.
That would suggest that one female can produce a lot of baby cockroaches.
One female can produce a considerable number of baby cockroaches. They produce an egg sac, which in its turn will produce baby cockroaches when the time is right. And you often see the egg sac extruding from the back of the cockroach or even left along, you know, side of your baseboard or inside of one of your shells, Lord forbid.
What role does the male play? Does the male play in producing the babies? Do they fertilize those eggs?
Yes, he does. As you may have noticed, if you've gotten sort of far through the book, that if you've done the pages of there's about 50 pages there that have a little illustration of how a cockroach is made. Mm-hmm. It's an animated drawing of how cockroaches is made there. And they mate back to back. The male passes a sperm packet, and the female keeps it until she's ready to use it.
That's one form of pornography that I have never been attracted to.
Well, should you have an urge, all you need to do is page through my book, and you'll see it right there in all its naked glory.
Now, I have always thought that cockroaches originated in Europe and Africa, but then I just read that the fossil record suggests that they began in the Americas. How did they travel around the world?
I'm not sure that that's the case. In fact, I don't think that it is the case. I would have to go back and look. I mean, maybe the new research has pointed this out. Since I wrote this book in the very late 90s, but I suspect that, you know, there's 5,000 species of cockroaches, at least, identified. And I suspect that they probably originated sort of simultaneously, but I don't know, in different places.
And the one that's most prominent in New York, as you mentioned, is the one they call the German cockroach, I assume brought over by ships from Germany or in shopping bags?
Possibly. In theory, yes. Whether or not that's the case, I'm not sure that anybody's actually really sure. But they do call that the German cockroach, although, as I said, here in Europe, in the part of Europe I live in, you don't see the German cockroach. There's about six species that are, so to speak, domesticated out of the 5,000. Most of the cockroaches in this world are species we will never come across unless we're in deep rainforest, high mountain, unpopulated mountainous areas. They live all over, but they don't frequently live with human beings. Only about six species. And I think there's only really a couple in the United States that are common. There's the large one that we have here in Barcelona and the German cockroach. Those two make up by far the bulk of the cockroach population in people's homes.
The large one, the water bug, or palmetto? Is that the palmetto cockroach?
That's the palmetto bug, yeah.
Where does the word cockroach come from? Has it been traced back by the OED?
It comes from the Spanish. It comes from cucaracha, which first reference to the word, it was, I think, John Smith, Captain John Smith of Pocahontas fame, refers to it as having infested the trunks of the Spanish settlers. Let's see just exactly what he says. A certain India, this is from 1624 in his History of the Bermudas, a certain India bug called by the Spaniards a cacaruch, the which, creeping into chests, they eat and defile with their ill-scented dung. So I think you could say that word actually comes from the Spanish.
Yeah. And
the Greeks called them blats, B-L-A-T-S.
Richard Schwide's book, The Cockroach Papers, originally published, 1999?
Originally published in 1999, that's right.
A Compendium of History and Lore, now available in paperback from the University of Chicago Press. We're talking about cockroaches. We'll take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the ways you can get rid of cockroaches and take calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can write to us on our show page at WMIC.org or on Facebook or Twitter. My handle is at Leonard Lumpy.
You shouldn't leave your food out on the table overnight.
Why?
You know in this city the roaches will get hit.
Roaches?
Yeah, I'm talking about those crazy crawling things they call.
Roaches!
Here come one.
Get
it. Here come another one.
Get it.
Everywhere.
Get it.
All in my hair.
Roaches!
And we're talking about roaches on today's Please Explain with Richard Schwide, author of The Cockroach Papers, a compendium of history and lore published by University of Chicago Press. How long have scientists been studying roaches?
Scientists have been studying roaches really intensely for about the 20th century. One great thing about the roach that lends itself to laboratory research particularly is that it has a very simple neural system. It's not difficult to see what makes a roach tick, see how it functions, and an awful lot of neurology students have spent a little bit of time dissecting a roach.
There have been studies.
It's a popular laboratory animal. It doesn't cost a lot to maintain it. And it's been used pretty much in the 20th century for that kind of biology.
There have been studies that involve decapitating roaches. What can be learned from that?
Well, one thing you can learn from it is that the roach brain is not located in its head, because you decapitate a roach and it's still capable of a whole bunch of neural responses that are sort of, you'd have to say, they come from a central point with a central connection in between the nerves. I'm not sure you could legitimately call it a brain, but it is. Sort of, it serves the same purpose for a roach, and it's located back in the back half of the roach, I believe.
You write about two researchers who pioneered work on roaches, Lewis Roth and Edwin Willis. Why were they so important to the field of cockroach study?
Roth and Willis did an incredible thing. They, before the age of the computer and Google, they searched out all the information about roaches practically that was known in the entire world. And they wrote an exhaustive volume on it for the U.S. Army, and the Smithsonian Institute published it, which remains today the touchstone of cockroach research. It's just, then they wrote a second volume, a second book as well. But they were, when you read their work, you're just amazed at how people found so much information before the information age. Lewis Roth was very kind to me while I was writing this book. He was at Harvard. He had a little office. He retired. But they gave him a small office up at the top of the zoological building there. And he would get in the mail every week considerable numbers of roaches from far-off places to identify. And he was the guy who kind of determined whether or not this thing was a new species or not. And he was just a very, very nice person. And, you know, the dean of cockroach researcher.
Another influential researcher in the field was Berta Scharrer. She had difficulty securing a university position. Was that because she's a woman or because she was studying cockroaches?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was neither of the above. I believe it was more because she was a refugee from Germany who had started her studies and her research in Germany. And here she didn't get an academic appointment until 1952. And she eventually was at Albert Einstein University, had a lab there, and did a lot of research with cockroaches, which she considered to be the ideal laboratory animal.
Let's take some calls. Our number is 212-433-9692. Sally from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a little story about roaches. In the early 1960s, I was a chemist for the Food and Drug Administration, and among the things we did was we had to learn to identify insect parts for food analyses. And for some reason, someone put that together with something else and brought us a large bell jar of living cockroaches that they said was from some South American country. They were 1.5 to 2 inches long and quite repulsive. But we took them, and the jar was covered with a cloth mesh, and they were put up on a high shelf in the laboratory where the filth analyses were done. And nobody fed them, and nobody watered them. And every now and then someone would comment on the fact that they were still living. And I'd say about 3 or 4 years passed. And at one point someone said, "What are they managing on? We ought to see if they need water or something." So someone took a squirt bottle and squirted it through the fabric at the top. And those roaches went wild. They clearly were interested in getting some water, but they had managed perfectly fine without it. It left this memory in my mind that the roach would really survive.
Well, you obviously seeing a couple of generations of roaches because Richards pointed out that they don't live that long.
They were eating the bodies of the roaches.
Richard, anything you want to respond to that?
First of all, I'd just like to say it's a great story. And secondly, I'd like to say that's why I wrote the book, because I found that, you know, while many of us have trouble remembering great parts of our lives, almost everybody remembers when they met up with roaches, or everyone has a great roach story to tell. And it kind of makes an author's work a lot easier when something is as impressive as that. People don't forget their roach experiences, and that's a great one that you told.
Santiago from the Bronx. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. What caught my attention was when the gentleman mentioned, you were talking about albino roaches. And I had I was a landlord for a while there. And I had a tremendous infestation of roaches in this ranch house. And I had to sell it. So I used to work for a bus company, and they used to fumigate the buses by little cans of insecticide that we set off. So I took home a couple of boxes. So I had about 20 or 30 cans, and I sent them all in the house and sealed off all the windows, all the doors and everything, and came back 3 or 4 days later and found most of the roaches were dead. The ones that survived were in the insulation, and they were small, and it was albino. All of them, the ones that survived, and they were walking around dizzy, you know. So I presume that the coloration had something to do with them being sick, and they didn't survive, and everything else died, you know. I wondered why they turned albino. That's my question.
That's one of the questions. The other question I guess we have to address is how do you get rid of roaches? So do you have an answer, Richard?
Well, I would say that I would not think that it was the insecticide. I think that group of albino roaches was probably a generation that had simultaneously more or less molted, cast off its old exoskeleton, and it was there, and in a few days more probably, they would have gotten a new exoskeleton. That's what I would guess. But they may have been albino roaches. It's hard, of course, impossible to tell without having one at hand. The best way to get rid of roaches in general, well, you can use... They don't like mock oranges at all, which is an odd fruit that grows mostly down in the South where I grew up, mock oranges. A little hard to come by probably in the average big city. They don't care for cucumbers, but I don't think cucumbers keep them away. They just won't eat a cucumber. However, the gel baits that are available now are much cleaner. They're much less toxic and do a better job than our old-fashioned insecticides that that we did use at one point. And almost all professional exterminators now have gone to using a gel bait to get rid of cockroaches. That's
rather than roach motels.
You can get a gecko lizard. A gecko lizard loves cockroaches, but they don't eat enough of them every night to really make a dent in a population. So I would say gel baits would be the best way to go.
Not Raid or Combat or roach motels. I've heard.
No, I don't think so. I mean, those have the, you know, they have the problem that you've got to cover all the dishes. You know, if you have a young child, you don't really want a child to be inhaling that. Whereas with the gel bait, it's the roach will eat a little gel bait, take it back to the nest, and die.
Well, I've heard that the best way to fight roaches is to fill some bottle caps with 50% baking soda, bicarbonate of soda, 50% powdered sugar, because the sugar attracts the roaches and the soda kills them.
That might be, but then you're left with the what I would call the mouse trap problem, which is that even if you trap a mouse, you still got to get rid of it. You would have to pick up the soda cap bottle with the dead roach in it. The other way to do it is you can build like the roaches love beer. So if you put beer in a container and a kind of a half board halfway across the container, so the roach comes in, it jumps, it gets in the beer, it can't get out. There are various ways to get them, but then you got to get rid of them. Whereas with a bait, the roach gets rid of itself pretty much. That's a real important part of the whole process.
Let's get Nick from Bayville in on this conversation. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are you, Brian? Thank you for taking my call.
I'm Leonard, Nick.
I never thought that I'd actually be saying this, but we have a cockroach that's really beautiful. They're called Madagascar hissing cockroaches, and my wife is a science teacher, so she has them in the classroom during the year, and then during the summer break, she brings them home. And they're, I got to say, from a maintenance perspective, they're very low maintenance compared to the other pets we have. But they are a beautiful-looking animal. They're about 2.5, maybe 3 inches long. And if you go to the Bronx Zoo, you can see them there. But I'm sure your guests could commentate on them. But I never thought I'd be describing cockroaches as beautiful.
You've written about them in the book. Also, flying cockroaches. How many cockroaches fly?
None fly really, really well. The water bug flies. The Madagascar hissing cockroach, Lewis Roth, the guy at Harvard, gave me a colony of Madagascar hissing cockroaches and wished me well and told me to carry them back across the border to Spain and raise them. And I did, and they thrived pretty well. They thrived so well, in fact, that I eventually gave the entire colony to an entomologist at the university here.
The people at Customs didn't mind that you're bringing cockroaches into Spain?
Well, I didn't ask. I packed the cockroaches. He said, you pack them in a container. They can stay in there for a couple of weeks, 3 weeks. Don't even put in an old banana skin. Just take them that way. And I did. I packed them and taped it up, and I had a lot of bad imaginary confrontations with the people at Customs. I didn't know exactly how I was going to defend my hard-won papers should they uncover those Madagascar hissers. But they are beautiful. I would like to agree with the gentleman who called. And they call them Madagascar hissing cockroaches because when you touch one, it hisses like a cat. And people do have them for pets.
It's said that cockroaches have an influence on the asthma rates in poor neighborhoods. Is that true?
This is true, unfortunately. This is true. There's about a half a dozen proteins that are common in cockroach detritus, which means cast-off shells that they've molted out of, or just dust that their bodies have lain in when they died, or places that are really infested with them. Cockroach gives off these proteins which are allergenic to human beings and lots of human beings. And they've done lots of really reputable studies, particularly in Manhattan, with kids with asthma and kids without asthma. And there seems to be little doubt. It's not just being poor. It's actually living in a cockroach-infested area that can precipitate asthma. It can certainly make an attack worse, and it can bring on an asthma attack. That's about the worst thing that cockroaches do.
They don't spread disease.
Really,
They don't spread disease. But haven't they also been used to cure diseases?
Well, in I don't think recently. Cockroaches in
they've been part of folk medicine as a tonic.
Yeah, exactly. Crushed cockroaches were often used in many places. In the South, they would crush them up in oil and use it if you had an earache, for instance. But they will carry disease. If they consume something that's contaminated, they can pass it on. But a cockroach in itself doesn't have disease in it that we can catch.
It's not as bad as mosquitoes or some other insects.
Not nearly so bad as mosquitoes. And really, when you think about it, even bed bugs are worse than cockroaches. I mean, the itching and the... A bed bug drinks your blood. A cockroach is not a blood sucker.
Richard Schwide's book, The Cockroach Papers, A Compendium of History and Lore, has just been made available in a paperback edition reissued by the University of Chicago Press. Richard, thank you so much for being on our show. It's been, I guess, a pleasure talking about cockroaches.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure for me to try and explain the fascinating world of cockroaches to people, and I appreciate the opportunity.